Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, 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 and welcome back, everybody, to episode number 2. That was an exciting intro. Welcome back. I'm going to cut right to the chase. This one is fascinating. Today, I have a very special treat for you. I have an interview with Father Shannon, who is a transgender Catholic priest living in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That combination hooked me from the very beginning. That's something I've never heard of. That is a person I've never met. That is a story that I've never heard told before. So today, we're going to dive into that conversation. We're going to have a dialogue. My questions will be answered. His story will be talked about. And we'll see what comes of it. I will say that after having the interview, I'm still left with many, many questions. Some answers were given, some I wish I would have dove a little bit further into, but you know what? I'm trying to come from a place of genuine curiosity, kindness, and respect. So although I'm not the most religious person, I'm hardly religious, to be candid, I don't want to tear religion down in this. So this is a safe space. It's honestly very light. It's much lighter than I thought it would be, but I still managed to ask some really thought-provoking deep questions and get some really thought-provoking deep answers back. So I hope you enjoy it. If you do, click the like button, leave a comment down below, share it, rate it across all platforms, and enjoy my interview with Father Shannon.
Love it.
So we will begin. Hello, hello, and welcome back. And today I'm here with Father Shannon. Thank you so much for being a part of this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's so great to be here.
Can you just go ahead and tell the viewers your name, your pronouns, your title, and maybe your location if you feel comfortable?
Sure. My name is Shannon T.L. Kearns. Pronouns are he, him, his. I am a father or a priest in the old Catholic Church, and I am currently based in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Do you know what's so funny is that when I saw that I'm from Minnesota myself.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I saw that. And I'm like, I feel this synergy going on right now. And as soon as I saw that, I knew I had to reach out to you. I put out an Instagram story asking about interesting people with interesting stories. And I had someone respond saying that they were a gay priest in the Midwest, but they didn't really want to do an interview. And then they led me to someone else who was a gay priest in Texas. And then they led me to you.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. So funny. I know. I found it very interesting. Because, you know, full transparency, I have never met, nor have I really ever heard of someone who is a trans priest. And I just found that kind of duality so interesting. So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit of your backstory, in general in life about who you are, but then how your identity started becoming a part of your religious identity as well.
Yeah, so I grew up a fundamentalist evangelical in rural Pennsylvania, and then became the first openly trans man ordained to the old Catholic priesthood. So you can imagine that there is a long and sordid story in the midst of all of that. Very, very complicated. But, you know, for me, my church growing up was totally my life. It was where my whole social circle was. My family was devoutly religious. I was homeschooled for 7th through 12th grade. And so, like, church was where all of my friends were. And I remember I was both, like, super, super invested and took it really, really seriously. And also at the same time, even as a kid, I remember looking around and being like, I feel like there are people who aren't here, and they're not here because we're not making space for them. And why is that? But I was growing up in a tradition that did not really like questions like that or questions at all. And I was also growing up at a time when especially at that time, we weren't really talking about sexuality. We were not talking about gender at all, other than like men do this and women do this. And I didn't know trans people existed. My first kind of experience of knowing someone came out was Ellen DeGeneres on her TV show, which I think for many folks, right? And I remember like my family loved her and her show, and then we boycotted her after she came out. And I remember looking at her and I had felt such an affinity for her because she was a single person. She wore boyish clothes and had short hair. And after she came out, I was like, oh crap. Like, I hope that people don't see in me what is happening with her. And I felt like I had to hide and really keep my feelings a secret. And I was, at that point, I was starting to think like, I think I might be more attracted to women than men, but like, you couldn't really talk about that. So I was just trying to do the right thing and be a really good Christian. I went to a conservative evangelical college and started actually to come out while I was in college. But really in a way of like, I'm struggling with homosexuality, right? You couldn't say you were gay. You had to frame it as a struggle. But I started to kind of tell some people, and then graduated from college and immediately went right back in the closet because I moved back home and I took a job as an American Baptist youth pastor. And I did that for 3 years.
Did you have to, you took the job as in, did you have to, were you studying that in school, or is that something you can truly just take the job for?
No, I studied youth ministry. I got a degree in youth ministry.
Okay. I was just making sure.
Communications. Yeah. But it was also like, I had done a lot of, I don't know, when you grow up in the church, like you get leadership experience. It's one of the things I'm grateful for my experience. I was leading things when I was way too young to be leading anything. So I had a lot of experience. And so I did that job. And again, still had no language for my gender identity. Really was grappling with my sexuality at that point, but was like, well, I took this job, so I'm going to be celibate for this time. I'm not going to date. And then I met someone and fell in love. And I was like, oh, I guess I need to leave this church. I guess I'm going to have to come out to my family. And so I did. And that was really rough and rocky. And so it took like a year off of all church stuff to just kind of heal and figure out, do I still want to be in this? Like, this is really hard and it's complicated and I don't really like it. And after that year, I really felt like, no, I think that there's more for me to do in the church. So I applied for seminary, which is the 3-year master's degree program that you have to do to get ordained. And I got accepted to Union Theological Seminary in New York. I got married to a woman in Canada, like 2 weeks before I started seminary. And my second year of seminary came out as trans and transitioned while I was in seminary. And so it was like just this incredible experience, complicated and messy. I was only the second student to transition while in school at my seminary. So it was a lot of like, they didn't know what to do with me. I didn't know what to do with them. We were kind of grappling through it together. But it was really in seminary that I was given tools to understand my faith in a new way and in a really powerful way. And also in seminary and the beginning of my medical transition that I realized, oh, actually faith and identity when put in conversation with each other can lead to something really incredible. And that experience just totally changed my life and changed the way that I do ministry and the things that I felt called to do.
That is such a fantastic story, but also a fantastic summary of such a story with so much depth to it. So I appreciate you being sure. able to do that so eloquently, because I'm sure there are so many lanes that you would want to talk about as well. I've always found, so I grew up in the church as well. My family are practicing Catholics. I went to Catholic school up until eighth grade. I went to a private university. And I sort of along the way came out as gay, and it's not, I guess not dissimilar to you, fell out of religion for a moment, beginning to question things, because naturally, you know, you're questioning yourself. Yeah. So in a way you have to question the entire universe at the same time. because your entire world, or what you thought was your world, has become shaken, and you know, nothing feels real. So you have to take that time. And my relationship with religion has changed so much over time. I think the more I understand the world, the more I understand the possibility of religion, or the more I understand the possibility of some sort of God or deity being possible. Because I think the more that you allow anything to be possible, then the more you do need to allow there to be the possibility of something being greater than what we are and who we are. And that's a very scary, humbling thing to admit, that could be real, especially after going through a period where you completely set it aside. I would love to know a little bit more about, you know, when you realized that you were trans, and when you took on that identity, and how that made you grapple with your faith. That kind of pivotal moment where some people shy away from it, but you eventually leaned into it. I would love to just know about that experience.
Yeah, you know, I think that it was coming out as gay that really made me kind of tear down everything that I had been taught and believed. And like you said, it was because you had to, right? It was like, if I don't undo all of this and really figure out what it is that I believe and that is authentic for me, like, I'm going to drive myself crazy. So I have to do that work. So thankfully, by the time I came out as trans, I had really done a lot of that wrestling, and had come to a place where I no longer believed that God was going to send me to hell for being queer or trans. I really like had done my theological work, but there was still this gap for me between, you know, growing up, my faith had been super emotional, and I felt like the Bible was God's love letter to me, and everything was for me. And then when I came out, my faith became super, super intellectual. And it became about, like, well, what's the history behind it? Like, what's the theological doctrine? How do I defend myself using the Bible so that people can't hurt me anymore? And I found myself, especially going through the beginning of my medical transition, and really feeling alone and afraid, and like, I don't know what this is going to cost me. I don't know where this is leading. And feeling like I missed the emotional faith of my childhood. And I was like, oh, something's missing here, and I have to figure that out. And I was really lucky in that I was at a liberal seminary, and we were doing this class. It's called Exegesis for the Arts, which is ridiculous, but basically it's part of a preaching class where they teach you like how to take a text apart so you can put it back together and preach it in a way that is understandable to folks that didn't go to seminary. But this particular class, we, instead of preaching a sermon, we're supposed to do an art project from our academic work around a text. And so we were doing this text on doubting Thomas, which is this text where Jesus has been crucified and resurrected and appears to the disciples, and Thomas isn't with them. And Thomas comes back, and the disciples are like, we saw Jesus. And Thomas is like, I don't believe you. Unless I see the scars and put my hands in his side, I'm not going to believe. Jesus appears to Thomas again, and Thomas immediately believes. And I was in the midst of trying to explain trans identity to a whole bunch of people that didn't understand it. Yeah. And it felt like every time I was like, yeah, I'm trans, people would start with this litany of like, have you had the surgery? What's your medical stuff? What does your mom think? Like all of this stuff. And so I'm reading this text, I'm having this experience, and I was like, oh, this is the same. Like, this is what Thomas's questions to Jesus are, like the same things that I'm getting asked. And it was a moment for me. It was the first time that I had like read my own story in conversation with scripture. And I was like, oh, there's something like really juicy here. And that's exciting. And then later on, I was also struck by this same thing in this passage, that Jesus in his resurrected body still has scars. And I had always been taught as a kid that like when we got our resurrected bodies, they would be perfect. And as a trans man with scars on my chest, I suddenly like read this story differently and understood scars in a new way, and started thinking like, Oh, maybe it's not about our scars being healed, but it's about our scars being holy.
Mm.
And I started to tell that story to non-trans folks, and they were like, oh, this helps me understand my scars in a new way. And I was like, oh, there's something really powerful here that, like, when queer and trans folks, A, can tell our stories, but can also, when we can read scripture from our own perspectives, we're actually opening up something beautiful for the entire community. And, like, there's power in that. And it's not new. It's not just trans and queer folks. Like, Black liberation theologians have been doing this for years, and poor theologians. But for me, it was this really powerful moment. And that was also a moment where I was like, there can be something where my faith can be embodied. I can have an emotional connection to the text. It doesn't have to be about defending myself. Like, I can be in conversation with these ancient stories, and they can bring new meaning. And, like, there's real life here. And that's super, super exciting.
Yeah, that's so beautiful to be able to relate your story so directly to a passage in the Bible that I remember learning growing up. I remember that story very well. I remember a lot of it, you know, very well. Going to private school and having religion classes so often, you know, you hear those stories, and to be able to, I think that was always the disconnect for me, is I was never able to see it as something real and tangible to me. It always felt so fictional. So for you to be able to relate to it so heavily, I'm sure that just strengthened your faith even more. I've always found that, like, queer people are, you know, invalidated in so many different ways, and we're constantly fighting just to be seen as something legitimate and something real. How, in a way, which feels like it's so negative to what, you know, Christianity is supposed to be about, and what Jesus is supposed to have taught, you know, about loving your neighbor and accepting others and preaching acceptance and love. So how have you, with kind of your new directions in religion, dealt with sort of that hypocrisy in a way? And how do you, I guess, combat that in modern times?
Yeah. I mean, I think we know that the church and people in the name of God have done really, really horrific things, not just to queer and trans folks, right? But to people all through the centuries. And yet, when I look at this Jesus story, this ancient text, I see this push and this movement towards centering the most marginalized, to overturning structures and systemic oppression in a way that just still feels so important and vital to the work that we're doing as queer and trans folks for liberation, to the work that we do in solidarity with other marginalized communities. And so for me, it's less about, so part of my work is to help folks and to walk with folks who are trying to figure out different and better and new ways to read scripture or to understand their sexuality and gender identity in conversation with their religious practice, if that's something that's important to them. Some of my work is to educate straight and cisgender churches about how to not be sucky to trans and queer folks, right? And how to be in solidarity with us. But I've become a lot less concerned with getting access and entry into those spaces, and instead have been really interested in what happens when we call people to come out of those spaces and join us in the work that's already happening.
Pave your own way. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's where, like, the goodness is already here. We don't have to convince anyone of our goodness or rightness, and the fruits of our theology and our work and our justice movements show that, like, this is good stuff, this is good news, and we can invite people to join us in that work.
Definitely. I mean, it feels again like true to the queer community of you know, people may not see us, accept us, or create space for us, but we are going to create it for ourselves. We will pave our own ways and make our own paths, and eventually people will follow suit because it's, you know, clearly the right way, acceptance of all people. How do I want to
keep going with that, because it's, and when we do that, we create more space for people to form families in new ways, to understand their own gender and sexuality in more expansive ways. Like, it's not just about we create space for ourselves. Like, we're actually creating liberation for straight and cis folks too. And like, that's, I think that's something that's important to claim and to name, that that our work actually is freeing other people too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when I came out to my family, all Midwesterners, as far as I know, many of them had barely interacted with the queer community, and I was their first person to a certain extent. And I know that since then, they all would openly admit that they are better people because they have learned something they may have turned a cold shoulder to, or they may have never been forced to, in a way, like, reckon with. And I think that that's a beautiful way to go through life, is when I meet somebody or see something that I've never heard of or I know nothing about, it's an opportunity for excitement and curiosity. And it's the whole reason why I love having these conversations. It's like, tell me something I don't know, teach me something that I haven't heard before, because the world is so big and there's so much to learn that it's a missed opportunity not to soak in as much as possible in the very limited time that we're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the very lucky moment in time we are here. I mean, to think that we're living in this exact moment where it is, in a lot of places, much better for the queer community, but in a lot of places, you know, still moving forward. But to be in that pivot is exceptional. How, I guess, this is kind of a strange question, but as someone who, you know, is a little bit more agnostic, I would love to hear your depiction of God, if that makes sense. Like, I would love to see, like, where you see God, how you see God, if God, you know, being a queer person, if God has pronouns. I know that's kind of a strange question, but seriously, like, I find it interesting.
Yeah, I'm a fan of using God as God's pronoun, just because I think that our conceptions of God are just always going to be limited, right? For me, like, the divine is the ultimate other. And so I can't put boundaries around that or put words on it. I love that some folks are using they, them as pronouns for God. I think that's probably the most accurate, right? Like,
or Ariana Grande, God is a woman.
yes. I think anything that really, like, shocks us out of our pictures of God as, like, an old bearded white dude in the sky, right? Because, like, that's not it.
No.
So if picturing God as a woman or as non-binary or trans or transcendent, like, helps to shake up those notions, I think that that's really powerful. For me, I think of God less as, like, a being or an individual, and more of, like, the consciousness, the love, the energy that we all tap into and are a part of and come from and will return to. My language, I feel like language just doesn't do it justice, but that's the best I've got.
Yeah, it's like a feeling in some way.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, the more, I'm in California at the moment, and people love, you know, to get quite more so, like, hippy dippy about it, and, you know, more so stardust versus religion.
Yeah.
And the more I learn about the universe and the history of the universe, and, you know, matter cannot be created nor destroyed, et cetera, et cetera. I do think it goes beyond words, how God can be a feeling, or God can be just that fact that matter cannot be created nor destroyed. And, like, that is, again, there aren't words to put it to it, but the fact that we are literally a collection of all existence could be an interpretation of God in
Absolutely.
Some strange way. And that is kind of what I'm more leaning towards, or the more that I get excited about religion is when I start thinking about it from an abstract point of view, which it seems like you're doing with, you know, trans theology, I believe. What's your, you have a new book coming out as well.
I do.
And do you find it super liberating, or do people find it, I almost feel like people would find it controversial that you're adding a new twist to the Bible and to, or I guess, like, a new approach to the Bible is probably a better, you're not trying to rewrite the Bible by any means, but How do you go about that in this day and age?
Yeah. So the book is really a continuation of the work that we've done with careertheology.com, which is really about like putting our stories in conversation with scriptural stories. And so it's less about even saying characters or things are trans, but like what happens when we read a text through a trans lens or a trans experience? What might that open up for trans and non-binary folks, but for all folks? So the book is a collection of 10 scripture stories, along with reflections from my life and growing up and gender. And you're right that like I don't feel like I'm doing something controversial. I feel like I'm actually doing less controversial theology than like gay and queer folks have done generations before me. But I do think that anytime we confront or interrupt maybe historical ways of understanding or center marginalized voices, folks in power get upset about that. But we have to, my pushback is that, like, if you read the Bible from a straight, white, cis perspective, you're still reading from a specific context. It's just that you don't name your context. And folks that are queer and trans and Black and Indigenous, when we're reading, we always name our context, or our context is named for us. And so I think that, like, I don't think that the work is controversial. I think people find it so just because they're not used to being asked to read from a perspective that isn't theirs.
People are very much afraid of what they don't know.
Yeah.
That has been kind of the struggle with the, because of course the Bible has been translated into multiple languages. It's been translated over time. It's been misinterpreted, you know, almost without fault, just because it's almost inevitable, because the more, it's like a game of telephone, the more the thing keeps being said, of course there'll be slight deviations in it. It's just natural that way. So to think that you're doing a version of that where you're just interpreting in your own way, It really shouldn't be controversial, because that's what it's been since the beginning of time. It's been interpreted, you know, it's, And I guess what do you hopes that you know, this new direction that this book and that your way of teaching does for people, or what do you hope that, do you hope that it becomes more of a norm? Do you hope that it gets that Christianity in general becomes much more accepting? What do you kind of see for that?
Yeah, I mean, I have two big hopes. One is that it gives trans folks in particular permission to claim this text as their own, to claim this tradition as their own if they want it, and to tell their own stories, and to see that their stories and the ways that they interpret scripture, but also the world, have value and worth and are meaningful, and we need them. So that's one big hope. The other hope is that we can move past this kind of defensive posture where we're allowing homophobes and transphobes and people who are fundamentalists to control the narrative, where we're always responding, and that we have to like respond and read and debate on their terms. I really want us to be able to be like, no, actually, like the way that you're reading isn't historically accurate, isn't the way that the church has been reading for centuries. And we don't have to have this conversation on your terms. And we can not only take back the conversation, but we can move it forward in a really new and beautiful way. And I hope that that does lead to both more inclusive churches and a more inclusive world, but also that it opens up space for more people to tell their stories, and that we get more interpretations. Because I think that, you know, I think that the more we have, the more stories we have, the closer we get to the truth. That it's actually like, we need to, it's a prism, right? And we need more to look at more sides. And that gets us closer to something bigger than narrowing it in or narrowing it down.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be so foolish to think that we could possibly have already understood it, or possibly have already figured it out and it would just be that simple that like, this is the exact definition. This is the exact meaning. This is the exact way of life, like done, deal, sealed, delivered, I'm yours, etc. That I think, it's always been difficult that at least Catholicism, always made me feel like I couldn't, have that exploration or allow myself that questioning. It was wrong to question or to explore, which I think that's like the most fantastic part of life is looking at all aspects of something, religion or not, just anything in this world, and being able to see it as a 360 object versus a two-dimensional object. Yeah. It seems like what is it? I know that you were saying when we were messaging back and forth that what was it like? You were in like a physical building for a while, but you're not preaching in a physical building now. Is that because of the pandemic or some sort of shift? Or
no, I actually left pastoral ministry. I was working as a director of faith formation, so doing education for kiddos and adults. And I left because I wanted to spend more time writing and doing creative work. I'm a playwright. I'm trying to write for TV. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is the moment. But much of my work has been online even prior to the pandemic. Just because there's so many queer and trans folks that don't have access to affirming churches, whether they're in rural areas or still living at home and I can't be out. So just felt a need to be able to kind of be a pastor in the wilderness, pastor in the margins to folks who didn't have access to that. I'm so grateful, like you were saying earlier, to like live in this moment where we can be on the internet, where we have Zoom and we can have online communities and Slack and right, all of these different ways to connect that just didn't exist when I was growing up and coming out. And so I'm just so grateful that it's provided those opportunities to connect with people.
Yeah, the access is totally different. The modern times, but also because of the pandemic, a lot of my religious family members and friends started viewing online mass and yeah, started practicing in a whole new way that I think has been really exciting for them, I guess, because they all of a sudden have left the routine of religion and have started almost having to remember why they practice it in the first place.
I think that.
You know what I mean? Like, I think the more that you do something over and over and over, you can easily forget, why am I even doing this? What am I even hearing? What are the words that I'm saying? What are the words that I'm reading? That if you are forced to completely change your environment and you know, sit down at home, log on to a mass, listen and not be distracted in this environment, I think that challenges your faith a lot more than doing the same repetitive thing over and over. So for you to create spaces like that for, you know, to write books and to post videos, to, you know, write plays, I think that is the future in a way of religion or of religious acceptance, is it being accessible to others. And I think it goes way beyond a physical building.
and I think too, it's also about like how we cultivate space for questions and conversations. And and I think one of the things that this pandemic time is also forcing people to grapple with is, what is it that we're missing when we can't do what we've always done? And it forces us to, I think, name what are the things that we're trying to do when we meet together? Like, is it just about ritual and tradition? Is there something else that's happening? And what is that? And I think that if we lean into that and allow ourselves to be uncomfortable and to talk about these things, I think it will lead to a richer and more robust faith as we emerge into whatever is next. I don't think we're going to go back to what was, but we have an opportunity to become something new, and that's really exciting.
It is. That's so beautiful. What do people get wrong about priests, or what do people get wrong about? I'm sure there are a lot of things, but I feel like a lot of people haven't been fortunate enough to have conversations like that. So what are some things that people get wrong about, or at least about, I should say, have gotten wrong about you? Maybe not all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, so part of it is that I'm part of a kind of a quirky Catholic tradition. So I'm part of the old Catholic Church, which is not in communion with Rome. So a lot of folks will assume that I have to be celibate. But I'm married. I'm married to a woman. I'm allowed to have sex, right? Like all of those things are acceptable. I can be in relationships. So there's that. I think that there's also this assumption, I don't know, of piousness or that my whole life is religion, and it both like is and isn't, right? Like I'm animated by this tradition that I'm a part of, and the ritual is really important to me, and ministry is my calling. And also, like, I watch TV and obsessed with Ted Lasso.
What are you watching?
I just finished watching Dickinson, which I loved on Apple TV. I just watched the pilot for Yellow Jackets.
I just heard about that yesterday.
Intense.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm like way behind. So yeah. I've only watched the first episode. I think that the other thing too is that folks think that I want everyone to be a Christian or a part of Christianity. And I feel like it's really important for me to say that I don't want that. What I want is people to have healthy and whole and abundant spiritual lives. And that for some people looks like Christianity. For some people, the harm has been so great that like the best thing that they can do for their spiritual life is to leave. And so some of my work is like helping people leave and helping people find something that actually is life-giving for them. And so I want to encourage folks that it's both like, if you want it, it's yours and you can claim this tradition and you can stay in it and make a space for yourself. And I will fight for you to make that space. And also if you need to leave, like you don't have to feel bad about that. Or if you need to take a break and come back later, like that's good too. That it's really important that we be healthy and whole. And that I think God is big enough to handle our questions and our anger. God is bigger enough to handle us leaving, and that's okay.
Beautifully put. I think people, or one of the biggest things I've learned is how much I have to be willing to be wrong about everything. And that's the same for everyone else, is that, you know, there's a lot of things in this world are not going to have clear answers. And the more you just accept that there's a million different ways to interpret it, and as long as your interpretation isn't harming others, isn't putting out negativity into the world, then it's a beautiful thing that we think different things, as long as there's no harm or hurt involved. Yeah. What do people get wrong about trans people, about transgender individuals?
Oh man, so many things.
So many things, yeah.
I don't even know where to start. You know, I feel like the biggest one is just that we are some, like, something other, right? Some, like, weird being that no one can understand. I'm really boring and normal. And my identity is like one of the least, it's both a blessing and has enriched my life in a lot of ways, and also is like not the most interesting thing about me. So I wish that people could engage with me on a human level instead of like holding up my transness as this thing that makes me really other.
Definitely. Do you think that although we just had this conversation, do you think that it does it has shaped you and your faith in a way that is almost undescribable to other people?
Oh, absolutely. And I think too, I mean, like, I am fond of saying that had I been born a cis guy, I'd be an asshole, right?
Like, I say the same thing too.
I'm so grateful, right?
I'm always like, if I was born a straight man, I'm like, I don't know what I would be, because I wouldn't have been given that healthy dose of perspective. I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah. And I think in my tradition too, like I had all of the qualities that like that were really prided and encouraged in cis boys. So they would have encouraged me. They would have pushed me into ministry. I would have been like a mega church planter, right? But the fact that I wasn't a cis boy meant that I didn't get that encouragement, that I had to fight for my place, that I had to really like fight to follow my calling. And I'm actually really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for the way that it forced me to have a different perspective on gender, to have a different perspective on privilege and power. So yes, I absolutely have been shaped in probably in ways that I can't even articulate by my trans story. And I'm so grateful for that. And also like, right, that otherness is still an element of how I'm treated. And so grappling with how to engage with folks is still part of the journey.
Definitely. And we're all on it, and you just got to strap in and embrace the ups, the downs, and all the loop-de-loops. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. I really deeply appreciate it, and I found it so interesting. So thank you. Where can people find you across the internet?
Yeah, so on pretty much everything, Shannon CL Kearns, I'm at that on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And that's also my website. And then also at queertheology.com is our website. And we're at Queer Theology on Instagram and Q Theology on Twitter.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And that's it. That was so interesting for so many reasons. I really felt like Father Shannon and I had a lot in common, you know, in our queer experience, in our Midwestern experience, in our sort of battles with identity and purpose in this world. I really learned a whole lot in that interview, and I was really pleasantly surprised after I left it how, I guess just like how joyful and elated I felt. I really left it with a smile, and I closed my laptop saying, wow, just wow. And I've told so many people about our conversation and how interesting it was. And again, it just goes to show you that everyone has a unique story, and I am so excited to hear as many as possible. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. Again, click the like button, leave a comment down below, rate us 5 stars on audio platforms, share the podcast, live the podcast, breathe the podcast. If you have any suggestions for topics, people that you want me to interview in the future, let me know as well. And I will see you next week for the very next episode. I hope you get a good night's rest. I hope you drink a chilled glass of H2O. I hope you're vaccinated. I hope you're being healthy and happy. And I will see you super soon. Bye.